to start. It's recording.
One of the interviewers, Mary Lewis, resident of Napier Street and member of the Fitzroy History Society.
Yes, and Meg Lee, who's coordinating the oral history project for the Fitzroy History Society. And we're here with Ted Rush, an ex-mayor of Fitzroy and a long-time resident. So how long have you been here, Ted?
Well, I came here in 1970, after wandering around Carlton and Upland and so on in search of somewhere to live, a house of my own. And I went, I think, something like 20 properties in just a school holiday time it was, and I found nothing. And I was really quite disgusted with the fact that I wasted my holiday, so to speak. Anyway, I rang that day my brother, and I was speaking to him up. He was in Horsham. And he said, well, go round to Smythe's. Their auctioneers, I know, were in Fitzroy. He said, I was at school with one of them. They'll know. And so I went round there, and the first thing that happened was I saw the younger of the brothers, and he said, look, I think you should just speak with my older brother, Ken, because he knows your brother. I know that. And so I did, and Ken said to me, all right, look, I'll be in charge here now. Get into the car, and we'll go, and we'll first of all go to 40 Gore Street, because there's a property there on the market, and it might suit you. Mm-hmm. Coming along the Gore Street towards 40 Gore Street, we stopped in front of this house where I now live, and he said, look, this has come on the market just as I've been coming up, you know, the door, really. He said, we can have a look in there if you like. And I couldn't believe that there was a sort of structured house the way it was put together. This is what I wanted. And he said, all right. He said, we'll do the papers. And by later that day, I had, to all intents and purposes, bought the house. And it made me realise that, you know,
how easy it was
if you turned up at the right place.
Yes. Yes.
And I've been here ever since.
So what was your neighbourhood like in those early days?
Well, it was what I would call a dull neighbourhood in a sense, because there were a few of the people from the past still living here, but not all that many. And nothing seemed to sort of be changing very much, except that we would be objecting about who's around and who's doing this and who's doing that. And it very quickly changed from being a dull neighbourhood to being a neighbourhood with several younger people, including myself, came and were interested in what was going on. My neighbour in here was Cornelius and his family. He was on the council. No, he wasn't. He the year after I was on the council, he came to the council, so we had two living close by.
And what was his name?
Lynn, G-L-Y-N. Elias, E-L-I-A-S.
Okay.
And so that was really, that became very helpful a bit later. And so the first year I was here, really, I just got to know the street, and it was mainly older people, and it included people who had been here for many years. There was a Mrs. Barker, I remember, and I think there's a lady's name over the road. I've been trying to think of that.
Anglo-Saxons?
Yes.
Very little immigration.
There was some immigration presence. But not a great deal of it. Mm. So there hasn't been. I don't think you would say there's been a big overseas contingent, as it were, of present owners. But the ones that have been around are very interesting, and it slowly changed to become more and more young people who were, younger people who were doing well probably in their jobs, and they could afford to pay what was above the general Melbourne market rate. And so Glyn Elias and his family lived in here, and next door, well, first of all, it was David Park, and then Dick Colbum, and the next door again, it was belonged to Dick and Bruce. So we obviously shared a great deal in common.
Yes.
And the first really notable thing about our community, because we've become very dependent on of each other, really.
Yes.
And the first thing was that an excursion into a new area for me. I bought this house, I bought the loft, and I had one for about a month, and I had to sell it again. And then the other one I had about a month more, and I had to sell that because I had no money. I thought I might be able to rake up someone who would be interested in. So that brought a different sort of group. But Bruce Coldham had been here the longest, and he's now a sort of reasonably important architect in the United States. And he helped us out with things, and it was decided that we would remove all the fences. Because they were falling down, and really, well, they just couldn't be repaired. They were simply falling down.
So that was between your left hand and then here, and right hand.
And right hand again.
So you have a common
four,
yard.
Yes. And when the fences came down, it was really one of the funniest days of my life to come out and go out to the back and see these sort of dunnies, as it were, sitting up there. Well, that sort of forced our hands, really. We had to do something about it. And so it wasn't a difficult job to do, because each house had a space in it which was possible to have the sort of toilet put in. And that really bound us together for the first time. And then David Park, who was next door, I said, not right at the beginning, Dick wasn't next door, he was living with Bruce. David said, "Oh, go away out a garden." And the garden's been laid out. I'll show you after. It's very, it really is remarkable what we did, I think. And then we had the issue of who was going to look after the garden. Well, we looked after our own bits and pieces, and that was no problem. I thought it might be, but it wasn't. And gradually, children began to arrive. Until we finished up, I can say, before the first child left here, there had been 12 different children spending a lot of time here if they were actually living here, like kids across the road. And so we had all these little kids running around. They would learn to play very effectively with each other. And I just, last week, there was a meeting, dinner, which Dick prepared for the Coldham children. There were four girls.
And can I get the surname correctly?
Yes. Coldham.
I see, Coldham.
And there were three children in 103. There were none here except I've had a hotel room with relations and friends and things.
Yes.
While going through. And then there were three there, four girls in here, next door at 107, and from time to time there were two or three changes at 109, but there were two girls and in one go, and then there was one boy, and then there were two more girls. Anyway, you know, it was all go, go, go. These kids, all, they grew up with all that.
Yes. That must have been wonderful for the children.
Oh, they think now they're in a wonderful state on Tuesday. Just thrilled to bits because two of them have got babies.
Yes.
And on the photos. And
yes.
All the,
yes.
And so it's never been here very quiet.
Can I be sure about this? The communal garden was behind three houses or more?
Four.
Four. Mm. 103, 101, 107 and 109. Mm. That's a wonderful space.
Oh, it was a wonderful space, you'll see. And the... I'm just going to ask for water.
Do you want to stop it for a bit or...?
All kept going, and we really the Ellis has then moved on later, and now there's one lady there, she's the former Mrs. What's her name? They had a big a very big store thing around in the
Smith Street.
No, beyond Smith Street there. Coming up from
Collingwood,
yeah. Anyway, she's there now, and I think she told me that she's some of this won't appear anywhere, I hope. And she was...
Do you want to turn it off? Or?
It's interesting, she...
So for that period of time, the 70s, a communal garden, I wonder how common that was.
Well, it wasn't very common at all. I mean, I hadn't come across it at all before. I think there are some. There was a newspaper article about it. Couldn't say. I probably got that somewhere. it just suited us.
Yes. Now, as adults, when you met them again on Tuesday, adults with their own family, what were some of their reflections?
Oh, they think it was wonderful. And they told me, you know, it's wonderful your place there, because we sort of said, it's right, exactly right, that if they're on our territory, they had to put up with whatever the person whose territory it was said and did. And towards the end, there's really the youngest one, Hugh. He would be sent around to try and find me and say, "Oh, I'd like a biscuit, a chocolate biscuit, they had chocolate biscuits," and constantly. And he'd come down here, and once he got a biscuit, the others would come out and wish us like, "Hey, buddy." And that went on for years, you know.
Yeah. Did you tell them that you're going to be talking to a recorder?
No, I didn't tell them that. When I met them, they were all in full flight by the time I got there.
Yeah.
It took about 1 minute. And with their new babies. And so
was this an impetus for you to stand for council, Ted?
Well, why I stood for council is that I... was the only person eligible to stand as an ALP member of council because the others hadn't been here long enough, anyone else. And so the selection went on, and I was being opposed by a man called someone Williams. I think he was selling property. Yes, he's a property man. And about a week before the finished, before the application was finished, he said to me, "Look, I can't be bothered going through all this. I'll leave." So I was
didn't have to do anything. Unopposed.
And I was this is where the things used to really get going. I was the only one, what was called the new brand, for a little while, and we were sort of renovators, we thought. That's what we thought we were up to, trying to get into the council, and then we'd do all these sort of...
And what year was this, Ted?
1972. I was there, I think, at the end of, I think I was a member at the end of 71, and then at the end of 72, in came people who were very prominent now, some of them. I mean, Barry Porton.
Yes.
And he went on to become a member of Parliament.
Yes.
And
Lance Patford was
Lance,
still there.
Lance Patford. Lance, he died. But he came in the third year. There's once and second.
And was now, Ralph McLean amongst those?
No, he didn't come in until even after the Patfords.
Mm.
But we did have Paul Cochran. He was
Yes.
He's now, you know, a Supreme Court judge.
Yes.
And we had. Oh, I think we were the main ones, and these other ones came in.
And why were you considered the new?
Oh, because it was run down. There was nothing in there. The members of council really did nothing much. I mean,
who were the old ones then?
There was Bill Peterson, but he did.
I remember him. Yes.
And there was. The man who Byrne, what was his name?
Okay.
Was it Byrne? Oh. Anyway, I've probably got that somewhere. Anyway, I'll come. It's not hard to find. Harold Mackerel would have been in that third group, I think. And so when I finished, I became ill. Because you see, for our sins, we weren't paid anything.
No.
We had no time, and I was working at the teachers' college, and it was just impossible.
You were a lecturer there?
Yes.
At Melbourne University?
Yes, it was secondary teachers' college in those days. And I went through there then until I retired, and of course, by the time I finished, without having to do any further study to get there, I was a member of Melbourne University staff. Except they then really said, "All right, you can stay here for 1 year." Mm-hmm. This is when the university took over. You can stay for 1 year, and then if your academic things are sufficient, you'll be able to perhaps make an application to stay on. And I'd had a master's degree by then, so that was going to count as nothing.
Yes.
So we were given really a rough treatment.
Yes.
And I think they would have let me be there a bit longer, provided I didn't expect to get paid very much.
Mm. So you were a member of council while you were working full-time. How long were you a member of council before mayoralty came your way?
Before
you became a mayor?
I was only 3 years, in my third year, because in the third year, I think five ALP people were actually, I think we might have won all the seats. It wouldn't be very difficult to find out about that either. But, We changed the whole face of the thing. Whereas in the first year I went when I was the only one of my kind, as it were, in caucus, not in public view of things. They were shocking, something. They just were rude. And it was really an interesting experience.
Tough times, though, for you, Ted.
Well, yes, but I seem to be able to manage tough times reasonably well.
But those original members of the council, my impression was that it was always a Labor council. Is that not correct?
Well, it was the Labor council, but these people weren't participating in Labor. They were going in as Labor councillors, but they weren't in line as far as Joe Byrne, that's the one I was trying to think of before. Joe Byrne, they couldn't. They had no contact, real contact with the Labor Party. The Labor Party was a very tired party by then. And it then flourished quite quickly.
So they weren't interested in policies that the Labour Party
might have been. No, they were interested in making many changes to it. You know, change would be a bit of an anathema to some of them, I think. Anyway, whose position I took, I think he might have been a fireman or something. But they had no one who was really much in touch with what's going on in the broader sort of world. Reading or becoming familiar with new things which were happening all around, they just seemed to not be capable of that. And they didn't like me. They didn't like me as a counsellor. They weren't very rude to me. I mean, I just they get some motion set up, off we go. But that was an interesting year. But there were people. There was Les Peel. Do you know Les Peel? He and his wife. They were both mayor different times, and he. He had been around the political bushes for a long time, and he was persona non grata to them as well, for different reasons. And so I really discussed each week what was going to be on the notice paper with Les. I didn't always agree with Les, but it was a sort of refuge, so to speak, to have someone to talk about. When we got going after that, the other years were really remarkable. Each Saturday, if we could, we went around and looked at the various properties being applied for permits and goodness knows what. And we got to know a few of the Greek and Italian people who had just recently come. So that was good. And really, to have people like Barry Porn and Paul Coughlin was just wonderful. And we stood our ground when the city engineer wanted to, you know, run things, they were able to sort of quieten him down. So but it was an interesting time.
Well, where did you start? Where did the new councillors start to change things?
I would say in 1973.
And what did you start with?
Well, some things had already been changing. Barry Porton had played a very important role in property that was all changed up there in North Fitzroy, Brooks Crescent.
Yes. That was the Housing Commission, the battle.
That's right. Then our battles began with the Housing Commission and other people.
Because just to explain, Brooks Crescent was wanting to be taken over by the Housing Commission, totally demolished and rebuilt. And there was an argument to conserve the heritage of the area.
That's exactly right, yeah. And so,
it became very bitter, didn't it?
Oh, it did. But I wasn't involved in it at all. But I know that there was all sorts of trouble. People like Paul Coughlin and Barry Boyd, Cornelius, and others, we'd stand our ground. I had sufficient experience of that with the freeway, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Harold Mackerel. He went with me. I can remember we went somewhere, a neutral sort of place, to talk to the CRB in those days. The Country Roads Board people, I think, were actually doing all the building. And they said that they wanted to see us, so off we went. And when I got there was just two of them and the two of us. And they said, all right, now this is what we're going to do. I said, beg your pardon. said, well, they said, yes, it's all laid out here. I said, look, I'm not going to read this now. Thank you for coming along and we'll have a look at it. And so on. And Harold used to be constantly saying, oh, I couldn't believe what you were saying to them.
We both knew Harold.
Yes, Harold.
He was a very polite.
Yes, he was. He was.
A gentle.
He was a very gentle person, yes. Yes. And anyway, we were anxious with a lot of the things to see what really lay behind. We weren't servants of the bodies who were, we were fellow sort of travellers. And so, well, that was really interesting.
Because it was radical what they wanted, what the Country Roads Board wanted to do.
Yes, it was not what we would want. I didn't know much of the history before, but we didn't want certain things to be done just because the Country Roads Board wanted them. And so I think a lot of it was an attempt to raise the capacities of the council to affect what was going on in the city. And that was one of the incidents which brought all that about. That had a funny ending, really, because just towards the end of when I was there, we had a meeting with some man. He was a member for Cario. No, Trezise. He was Rhodes Minister. And it was one of the funniest moments of my life because we talked about what we were wanting and I can't even remember what it was. But he then said, when we were leaving, he said, I'll be looking for you people when we're elected too. he was an opposition actually, the first. We'll be looking for people like you. I thought, I can't believe you can say that. Oh, we did have funny times.
He was impressed with you then.
That's what I want. Not, I was really the third party. Yeah, the other two were spot on.
You sound like a hard bargain, I'd say.
Well, we did bargain. And we were keen that, you know, the right behaviours were associated with whatever we were doing. Mm-hmm. And another case of that was... you see, this next one led us to see Hamer. There were people bashing down buildings night and day, so to speak. And there was a building on the corner of Gore Street and
Victoria
Parade, which was a beautiful big old house, had a stunning staircase. And I'd only just seen it very briefly. Louise Elliott, she was wonderful about all these things. She became a councillor too, as things went. And Louise offered to check as often as she thought was, if it was strictly necessary, someone else would be involved. But she was party to saying that we've got to protect this building come high water or whatever.
Yes.
And it was the middle of winter and we had a whiff of what was going on and she rang us to say that she believed they would be there late in the day, like midnight or whatever, and we should all go down there. So down we all went, and lo and behold, there they were. They'd been there, these people, smashing the place up, and there was fog. They were hurling the things from the roof, you know. Preservation, and they were really school kids, I think, under this man from Werribee. Well, they said they were. I mean, they might have been, never said anything, I suppose. And that had to be demolished because they'd done so much damage.
Mm-hmm. Was that Money Miller's house?
I don't know whose house it was.
I think it might have been.
Yes, it was.
It's a very elaborate
building. Yes, it was a very, it was really the most elaborate building, I think, of its kind in the area.
Yeah, it's a shame, terrible shame.
So, and then that sort of brought us to have contact with Hamer, and Hamer was fairly good. Another funny thing happened about that. As we persevered, Hunt was the minister for,
Planning? Planning.
Yes, he was associated with planning, that's, yes, exactly. And I think it was planning. It might have been housing, it might have been in the title too. I'm not sure what his title actually was now. But anyway, what happened when that was coming to an end, a very funny thing happened. We had to see Hunt about some matter, and a good friend of mine, Howard Nathan, and he's now a Supreme Court judge too. Oh, he's finished, he's sort of not working anymore. But what happened was that he and I were called to see Hunt at the same time. Hunt had no idea we knew one another, so off we went down there. It really was funny, you know. Now, Councillor Rush, do you know Councillor Nathan?
So Helen Nathan was from
South Melbourne.
South Melbourne.
And so that was all really very interesting. And things then began to quieten down. There was more sort of access to the ministers and so on. But that didn't stop some of the things happening.
Well, opposite that highly decorative house on the corner of Gore and Victoria Parade was also a terrace block that was
yes, it was also just knocked down.
Yes, yes, and a long period of inaction over rebuilding on that site due to union action, I think.
Yes, well, we seem to be able to get I didn't ever have that happen, but the CFMEU, or one of those unions, was very pro-green.
Yes.
What they, I think they called sometimes pro-green. Anyway, they would be prepared to help.
Yes.
But of course, Sunday morning at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning wasn't really the best of times to try and win that argument.
So you were really, as a councillor, Ted, you were really wanting to have more information about which private developers might have been demolishing houses, and also what the Housing Commission itself might have been doing.
Well, but yes, that's the case. And permits, we began to know that permits were being done in an fairly orderly way.
Yes.
And we could see what was going on. And that was the worst of the things that happened, I think.
Were you involved in the Atherton Gardens, establishment of the Atherton Gardens?
No, I was just a bit before that. Now, to be fair to Joe Byrne and all those people, they did some very good stuff in that area. They really did. And it's been developing more and more as time goes by. I mean, I think now it's really a very interesting locality. I think the people there they're not rebellious about what's going on or anything like that. It's really good that they're there.
But you worked on other issues too with council.
Well, yes, there are all sorts of things. Like there's a very local thing. Another funny story was that I was responsible for Carrick Council property, I think. I was never sure what it actually was. But anyway, because I knew what things had to be done, I get them done. Nothing happened. But I think I was a sort of like the council. We didn't give particular tasks to particular councillors, like you would with the state government, for example. And anyway, Joe Byrne and all those people really did set out to make improvements with the library. And because there was, what's his name, very old man.
The old librarian.
Yes.
Yes. I can't remember his name.
One photograph
of him.
Yes. He had won his way, so to speak, I think, 3 or 4 years before I was there. And I can remember going to that library in the chaos. It was only in the reading room, current reading room. And he was so old.
Mm.
And he was about to be replaced by... Can you see this name business? The chap he became librarian, and he and Hart, was it Hart? Hardy, something like that. Anyway, they left together to try and work things out. Now the bloke who was put in place after the old one.
Mm-hmm.
He was determined to have the glamorous lights. That nearly burnt the council down. It was such a waste of money. And of course, I didn't know the background to all that, so there might have been lots of other things. But anyway, it was duly finished. And... it must have been my second year probably. I was the person responsible for the library building. And it had been, Eileen Wheeler had been before me. And, you know, it was disgusting. It was disgusting, I suppose it goes on everywhere now even. But I got the honour of being in charge of the library when it was opened. I'd only been there 3 weeks in that position. And poor Eileen Wheeler didn't get a say.
Oh.
Well, at least I did. Now someone's pinched the... Oh, interesting, I must try and find out. It's that plaque that was there is gone.
Oh.
Just recently.
Louise Elliott has now been taking an interest in again. But the plaque... Would this be the plaque that was... commemorating the building of the whole wing of the library, opened by the original, by the mayor at the time, Councillor Ewing?
No.
Back in 1880?
No, I don't think that was there even in 1980. There's a sketch of the town hall, and I don't think it goes all the way down.
No, that's the original building, but then the later wing.
Yes.
Which was by, of course, my memory's gone now.
I know, goodness.
Got the architect. George Johnson.
Yeah,
built it, and we know his descendant.
Yes.
Who's done quite a bit of work on it. And there would have been a plaque.
Yes, I know
Peter Johnson.
Peter, yeah.
Yes.
Mm. I wouldn't say I know him, I know who he is.
So, but back to the old chap in the library. He must have been there for many years.
Look, I've fished all these things for chat that I've been...
There were stories about him.
Oh, yes, there were stories about him. But what impressed me most was he was simply very old.
Yes. Looked about 90.
I don't think he would.
Yeah.
Be that as old as that. Anyway. So they were the sort of things that we... It was really a renovation. I can remember once saying that we were renovators. Renovators in a funny sort of way in all sorts of areas.
Do you
remember? We weren't new.
Yeah. Do you remember Mrs. Cutton, who was the descendant of Samuel Ewing? I think his name was Samuel.
I think so.
Well, she gave money to the... Eventually gave money to the library.
Right.
She was a descendant. She gave a lot of money. I think they've still got the Ewing bequest, haven't they?
Well, yes.
The
foundation, I think, is still...
So I'm not sure how much money they get, but it's for purchasing books, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. And you'll often get a book from the library with a nameplate in the front.
Well, yes.
Saying it's
been... The
Ewings. So that's before your time.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. It's so much... in retrospect, so much seemed to happen.
Yeah.
Just so at the time I was there.
When did you actually retire from the council?
I think I finished. I went to hospital, I think, in July 75. No, that might, I don't know whether that's right.
So you were seriously ill?
Oh, I got hepatitis. And I was really quite ill. I knew I'd been doing too many things, you know, it was just hopeless.
Yes.
And I didn't mind doing them, you see. That was.
I was talking to Mike Moore, and he recalls you talking about your work with kindergarten.
Well, yes, I've done. You see, I've done a number of things. I was vice president for years, a number of years, of the Pre-Kindergarten Association. And when it was changing, trying to keep going with the money it had. Yes, I was there for more than, I think, not more than 10 years, I think. I was there for quite a while anyway. And I was quasi-president for quite a bit of it because of people retiring and all the rest of it. And I found that extremely interesting. And we wrote up the framework of the current change that's going on in kindergartens. With all sorts of in a very detailed way, we were putting down what was acceptable behaviour for a lot of things, and the way that things should be set out, and so on. And that was good. It's made me think about it. A million and one things. I was president of the Victorian Teaching of English Association for years.
Yes. That's a very vibrant organisation.
And I seem to have plenty of things to do. So it really is interesting.
I'm going to stop this, Ted. Right, it's going.
Yes, and I've got several sources I've looked at. One says 163, and one says 183, or more than one, I think. 183, so I'm trying to sort of grab that dog.
Mike Moore is very good on that.
Yes, he is. I'll speak to Mike again. I saw him just the other day. Thank you, that's great. Anyway, what happened here was that when I came here, this was very, very sort of, what's the right word? It was used by a lot of people who were drunks, going up and down the street during the days and so on. And just before I came, I think it just weeks before I came, the nuns in here, the next property, arrived. You see, I think they were brought out by Archbishop Knox because he was a friend of Mother Teresa at Kolkata.
So this is the Little Sisters of the Poor.
It's got another name, I think.
Sisters of Charity.
Yes, Charity. Is it all that? I don't know. Any names like that. Really, it's interesting. Anyway, when I came here, it was all summed up really when one of my uncles, who was always pleased to say what he thought of things, he came once for lunch and he said, when I opened the front door, they were milling around. You really? His wife. And he said, Christ, where do you think you come from? And that had sort of overtones of that sort of thing. But when they first came, they were brought out here by Archbishop Knox, because he was the papal something or other, papal, let's see what happened here. Anyway, the papal appointment to Kolkata. And he retired from that position to become Archbishop of Melbourne. And so what happened was, he said to, I presume he said something like to Mother Therese, look, we've got all these down-and-out women, drunks in the streets, would you like to come and try and help us out? Well, even before he arrived, I think, that had been set aside because they had a sort of a drive to find all the all the drunks, and they only found five. Father Rivers Jennings told me that he was connected with Knox as well. He was sort of a personal secretary, I think, to Knox. Anyway, what happened was then, I think Knox then said, well, look, we'll set it up and can be used to have men stay there. Wow, the state of affairs was really pretty bleak, because there were men, youngish men, trying to make all these other men behave, and even had some of the nuns there overnight. Oh, it was awful. And that was debated by the council, whether they should be allowed to stay there. I was either frightened of the Catholic Church, or I was a sort of stooge of the Catholic Church. It didn't matter which way I went, I was nowhere to do it. So when it was debated in caucus, I suppose, first, because anything in those days we'd always do in caucus, it was agreed that they should be left there for, after a long fuss and bother this was, they should be allowed to stay there for 6 months, provided everything was put in order, which provided safety. Well, that went on, and they had to put a new fire brigade. They didn't have a fire brigade ladder. Anyway, I can remember saying that provided all the firing, all the issues about fire are attended to, they can stay long with it. We'll see if they can stay longer than that or something. So that was all right. Anyway, what happened then? They said they didn't even think to go ahead with any of the things we said they had to do. But they had settled there with dreadful situation. So, and they had drinking, they'd be going up and down the streets with bottles and things. And there were, amongst these men, there was a man, I don't know whether you've come across him but through anyone else, he was called Big George. I think that's what he was called. He was sort of the hot head honcho for these people who were wandering around. And they had two or three ladies who really just hung on at the end of the list line of these people and went around with them, and one of them was murdered over the road. She was found with one of the properties that goes down.
Oh yes.
And it never ever seemed to reach the newspapers, I don't think. Or anyway, she no one, of course, knew who'd done this, there's so many possibilities. I think they might have just sort of given up. Mm. And people, we wondered whether it was Big George. Well, I suppose if I had to pick one of them, that's who I would pick. But I don't think there was any sort of clear evidence. So anyway, that went on, and that went on for quite some time. The nuns left, and that was under the control of these young men, Catholic young men. Some organisation. And then it was decided that it wasn't a success, to say the very least. It wasn't a success. So it was arranged for these men to be taken to, again, you see these names, the place midway between the airport and Sydney Road, with the Catholic.
It's not Osmond House.
No, I don't think it was. No, it was. Anyway, they all these men got into the bus, and off they went. I thought, well, I'll be back by later tonight. And yeah, they never ever came back.
Oh,
and it was one of the most astonishing sort of senses that you could have had. I don't know why they didn't come back. I suppose because that was closed, and all the substructures vanished. I suppose. It was such a funny feeling.
Would this be the same time that a lot of the hotels were closed down as well?
Well, yeah. Well, it was mixed up with all of that. It's hard to know who talked to who about what was actually going on.
Well, the Catholic Church must have had.
This Catholic Church is still on it. And, of course, it being Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa would come out.
Mm.
Now, I'm hoping to be invited to Calcutta on the 4th of September when she becomes a saint.
Well, I have a memory, which I thought might have been a dream, of seeing her in Gertrude Street.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, oh, that's extraordinary. And I hadn't realised that, you know, she visited. Mm. But, well, we still see the sisters with their characteristic saris.
Yes,
walking around, yeah.
Mm. And,
so you're going to go to Calcutta?
Well, if someone invites me. But really, I was on speaking terms with her. You know, and I didn't blame these nuns. They were more for protecting her when they thought she was going to be sort of bailed up by someone, I think.
So now the building is run by the Sisters of Charity for...
I think it is the Little Sisters of the Poor, is Mother Teresa's.
It's on their gate.
Oh,
I think so.
You'll check.
So, do you
have missionary in the word, don't it?
Oh, okay. Mission to something. Yeah, we'll have a look.
Yeah.
But and so what was your impression of Mother Teresa, having met her and talked to her?
Well, I didn't really get to a stage really of talking to her about what went on, but she really was a very humble lady. That was certainly the appearance. And she had done all... What they attempted to do was really what should have been being provided by the government. I mean, there were incidents. We had incidents. Another incident was when one of them broke into my neighbour's car and vomited all over the front seat. Oh, God. And I can remember him washing. I've never known whether this really got through to the sisters or not. But as soon as he knew that she was coming, he decided to take the hose out and wash the street down. It was a Sunday morning.
And that's your story there, Ted, is it?
These are my earliest memories of all this.
Yes.
So you can...
Have you covered things there?
Oh, well, this, you see, there was... I think it's worth... See, I'm still sort of, from time to time, trying to say to people, look, when you talk about the institutes around, these nuns are still there after all those years.
Mm.
Nearly 40 years, I would think. Or more, perhaps. And they sort of work away all the time, and they mainly take people, women in there, in emergencies, certainly. And they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was thinking the other day when I saw them with a Vietnamese lady. And there they are, the Indians, by and large, doing their work. Doing the work in there, although there are some Australians as well. I don't know how. I really just don't know how it all works. But that was really good. Here, a non-Catholic, and I was not a stooge of Catholic Church. Now these are the ones. Well, there's all sorts of things. I was pleased with when you asked about the social fabric, because I hadn't thought of it very much.
Mm.
And then I did the count of about 10 houses this way and 10 that way. The 10 on this side were, most of them, I think, were from overseas. They're overseas people coming here. On the other side of the street, as far as I can remember, they were nearly all, as a result of this, almost all of them were Australian-born. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing. But we certainly have had a wide range of people around. And Gore Street continued down there. There's important people down there, I think. I don't know. I think John Clark's one of them. You know, the,
yes, today, yes.
So that all goes on.
So most of the houses would be owner-occupied?
Yes, owner-occupied.
Mm. So immigrants were purchasing the houses?
Yes, and we got them for practically nothing. Really disgusting. But it just is amazing. You see, we're right at the top of the hill.
Yes.
And I think some of these recent people have woken up to that. And it's a very steep hill down.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
Down to
Smith Street.
Yes, and, but the thing which I find most extraordinary is I would have thought the Australians wouldn't have wanted to be on the hill running down.
Mm.
See, from here it goes just down. And it goes down to that basement level that most of them have got. And I thought that you know, the... They might have been more interested in having the being on the top of the hill, so to speak. It's interesting.
But are they bigger houses on the other side?
Oh no! Look, there's another thing which is very important. I really am delighted that we've been, except for one or two places, Gore Street has kept its houses, and we are a remarkable place in terms of the variety. It's just wonderful when you look at it.
Does that happen through the Fitzroy Residents Association, do you think, Ted?
Probably a bit. I was a member of there, but I haven't. I really only hear about the properties, really, people like Louise. You know, if I see Louise and we have a cup of coffee, we'll talk about what's going on.
Ted, can I take you back to the free kindergarten movement?
Yes.
When you were developing policy and changing things, what were the conditions like in Fitzroy for young children?
Well, at that time, they weren't too bad. The lady who... was principal of Clyde College, I think it was. She set up a kindergarten just near the swimming pool. It's got a name. And then there was, see, the kids here, they all went to the one just down the street here. So in my time...
Lady Gowrie? Is that one, or was it a different one?
No, Lady Gowrie is different.
Yes.
Lady Gowrie's in Carlton.
Yeah, okay.
I think they're coming on to tough times too now.
Yes.
It's the money business. And,
yes, I thought they got
the 1930s. See, what I did, what was really interesting, I haven't thrown all these things away. I'm about to open a big box of them. But when I was at the FKA, I was in charge of...
FKA?
Free Kindergarten Association. It was never free, but then, never mind. But when it had its 100th anniversary, I was the person who did all the... I saw all the 20 initial kindergartens, went to them all. One was here, the one next to the church.
In Napier Street.
In Napier Street, yes.
Where Brian Hale was
minister. Yes, that's right, yes. And that kindergarten was really interesting because it got mixed up with Hungarian people, the printers. And it was really interesting to think that these things went on. And I went to present them. We had a park built for each of them. And I noticed one in the city, that we had has been taken down. I just wondered how long they would last for some people, because I wasn't prepared to say to them, oh, don't worry, we won't worry about it. I was saying, this is too important. And I gave away all my parks, including the one in the city. But anyway, here, what happened was that I thought it was interesting that I was going around there and I was going to present this and so on. So I go around there and there were about 30 people there, perhaps, and a couple of clergy who knew the ways and the ways things have been working here. And the so I read my spiel and my voice at the back was yelled, "That is not true!" And I thought, what am I supposed to do now? Ah, I'll never forget that.
Now, some of those pre-kindergartens are named after a Beckett.
Yes, Lady Beckett.
Lady
yes.
Beckett down in South Melbourne.
And more importantly, more interestingly, the lady who became, who was in charge of the Red Cross during the Second World War, her name, she was at the nursery at the worst of the nurseries. She was one of the Kempton family. They were here in Fitzroy in the olden days. She left the kindergarten on condition, just as chairperson, but on condition that if she, if and when the war finished, she was able to go back from running the Red Cross for Australia to be president of kindergarten. And you know, it's really interesting what goes on.
Did that happen?
Yeah, I think it did. Anyway, there's just been a book written about her. Where's my copy?
Did you meet Lady Beckett?
No, she'd finished by the time.
There's a portrait of her.
Yes. That's right. And there were these 20 places were in North Melbourne. Oh, and there was one. That's another one I got into trouble with. St James Old Cathedral.
Yes.
It had a kindergarten.
Oh, right.
I said I wanted to have the park put up, but they said we don't want a park like that. That's the only one I think.
What date was that?
When that happened,
yes.
Just recently, like 4 years ago, I think.
Oh, I'm just wondering whether, because it is classified by the trust, and maybe they thought we're not allowed to put the trust plaque on the building.
Yeah, someone else asked me that. Yes. It's interesting, I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah.
Yes, that might be what's what. And, but it was really, it really was preoccupied with sort of its own status, I think. So I spoke to a couple of people there.
Well, I hope they put it in the archives.
I think they might have sent it back to us.
What a cheek.
Because people wouldn't have things, you know. I know. And saying all these things, I finish up with this story. Actually, I think I'm lucky that I don't worry about it. I just think to be done and you do it. And then they chat and go home. Oh, I went home. I mean, but that's really interesting.
I don't think we got the
can you read, by any means, can you read this? I'm not arthritis, and I can't even write properly.
I think Ted, you might be better at writing. Oh, I'd say your writing was better.
That's all just a whole lot of things, and if you're interested in anything, you'd have a look, and because some of them are ran out of space.
Yes.
It might be good for us to.
Look,
type it up and.
Well, you certainly could, but I don't know that that's.
So I'm just trying to pick out some key words here too. Shopping.
Yes, shopping. I didn't get very far with shopping. We didn't have anything to do with any shopping things that I can remember when I was on council.
No. But for you as a resident...
Oh, yes, for me.
We had it in terms of being a local resident.
Well, we had, of course, one of Melbourne's best butchers, Jonathan.
Still going.
Yes.
That's Collingwood.
Yes, just across. Well, just come up near the boundary, I guess. Yeah. And but that was we were always very pleased about that. And there were never very many complaints that I was aware of. About the shopping business.
So you would stroll down to Smith Street to greengrocers, butchers.
We had a greengrocer. Yes. We had small butchers. Coles was there.
Yes.
And it left until it came back now. And I hope... I don't want to go and yell at them. But anyway, all the windows at the second level all had people's laundry out in the sun.
Mm.
You know, look up and what do you see first? Ladies' panties. No, I'd like to... But in the interest of the... Because it was dreadful that all was knocked down.
Mm.
Didn't need to
be. But that was a few years ago. This is the second regeneration of it.
Yes.
So your supermarket shopping or grocery shopping would have been...
That was all, we had only Woolworths.
Yes.
So we didn't have any sort of...
Alternatives.
Any alternatives. Mm-hmm. And certainly the big buildings down here are still, many of them are still there. It's really a worrying business for everybody because they can't be used for very much ordinary life. Mm-hmm. See, I was interested when we saw the, when the man spoke at the meeting about when Val Noon was there. That was one of the big buildings which had been fully occupied. But I think a lot of these other ones have probably not even in the past been fully occupied except for sort of rubbishy things.
Mm. Yes.
And right now, I don't know what, I have trouble with these names. They're built behind now. There's a huge amount of change going on.
Little Oxford Street.
And now on the side, on But it's interesting that I read that the question, I thought, well, I don't really know very much about it at all. And you see, they're on the Collingwood side. We've now got a very good Muslim business with.
That's Somsa.
Yes.
That's Somsa.
Yes.
Turkish, isn't it?
Turkish.
Halal meat.
Yes. And they're doing very well, I think.
Well, during the time that you were on the council, a lot of work was done providing sort of social services through the council. I don't think they do that.
Well, they're still doing it a bit. I've got a cousin who's now 93, and she refuses to do anything but manage her own affairs.
Mm.
And she's in touch with Richmond Council.
Mm.
And... they're not as generous as they used to be, I don't think.
No. Yes. But do you remember those days being that there was a particular problems with social, the council trying to deal with...
Well, we had trouble with the Aborigines, which should never, ever have happened. And they sat on the Fitzroy side of the street, or the Fitzroy people in the end, got rid of them to be on the other side. That's on the other side.
Yes. The city of Yarra still says no drinking in the street.
They're not bad. The average is they're not causing any fuss at the moment.
You've got here, Ted, not seen with difficult association in your notes here about the Aboriginals.
Yes.
So when you first came to live here...
Oh, well, they were in that gang I mentioned.
Yes.
There were several of them. And there was one, Nancy. There was George and Nancy.
Yes.
I don't think they had anything in common with them except being part of that show. And you see, another thing, which strange thing that happened was that Mr. Liatsky, who lives about three or four houses up, he was murdered down here way back, just after I was on the council, I think. But anyway, they never ever found out who killed him either.
Mm.
He was with his wife and daughter. And
was there a strong police presence around? A strong police presence?
No, not very much. No, there was a famous another police. I know. If you tell me to shut up, I will. But it was interesting that when the nuns were in here, there was a young Aborigine called what's his name? He'll come to me, I'm sure. Anyway, he was a nuisance of the First Order. He was drunk and he would cause trouble and anything. And one day, I was here at home. Normally, I would have been at work, but I was home here. And I bang, bang, bang on the door to find two nuns. And I said, oh, hello. And they said, oh, look, we're in trouble. There's very difficulty. I said, what's happened? They said, oh, Leon's jumped. Jump over the bank.
He's crying
on the ground.
Oh dear.
Anyway, what happened then was that really it was a comedy beyond belief in a funny sort of way, given that Leon was all right. But just was lying there, and so I then went out and had a look. And lo and behold, Father Eberstein, it's amazing what happens in life. He was coming, he was involved with the nuns, you know, with the Archbishop. But I said, look, can you come and help? And so he said, oh yes, he said, he was a big man. He said, I can climb over the fence. So I climbed over the fence. And there was Leon stunned. He wasn't injured, nothing broken or whatever. But by that time, we'd rung an ambulance and the ambulance came and the police came. the police knew Leon from, you know, they're on very common ground. And so they were trying to get Leon up. The ambulance people were saying to him, now just get up, just get up. And here's it was just amazing. Anyway, we finally all finished up out in the back street, in the little Gore Street. And the police said, now we've had enough of it. Get into the van. Stop there. Leon, get into the van. And then came, the language has to be spoken. Get into the fucking van. And he jumped up in the neighbourhoods like this, the point is near your hips. Poor old Leon. The nuns were there and we're all out there.
Well, you've obviously been very happy living around here, Ted. Your observations of the social fabric.
Yes, it's the social fabric that I'm truly here. And of course, you see, when I first came here, there was the lady who ran the. I don't know her name either, but there was a wine bar, and that made life even more complicated.
Oh, Begona. Is that Begona?
No, it was just right here at the corner of, almost the corner of
Goran.
Goran does. No, it's just Goran Smith. Don't they?
No, Goran Smith don't cross.
She was about two properties back towards Smith Street from Little Gore Street.
Ah, yes.
And it's only a small place. Yeah. And it might even be where there's now another big place.
Ted, you've got here Bill Earle, teacher, West Side, East Side.
Yes. That was when I was numbering the things. It's an interesting place.
You've always felt safe.
Yes, although we had two or three things that happened. One was when an Aborigine who had a big stick went in to next door, got over the fence. It's hard to get over the fence, but he did, and he frightened them a bit. But he didn't do anything, so it was. But no, we haven't been. I don't think any of us have felt frightened, really. And Mrs. That show when Mrs. Liascu was killed down halfway down to Webb Street. But he was sort of just dreadful. But it didn't seem a local thing at all, I don't think. But come down to the garden.
If you want to talk to me any other time.